agree, Tom?
I'm sorry, I'm playing Civ 4. You're a bastard, man. You better not be playing Civ 4. That's just like in your face.
But to stay on topic, I'm playing Civ 4 as the French, and I just founded the internet as a wonder of the world. So all my cities have extra happy faces now because they can download porn. So.
I'm going to come over there. There's the segue. Beautiful.
Exactly. All right.
Okay, ladies and gentlemen, we would like to turn over the show now to Mr. Tom Chick. If you've listened to these podcasts in sequence, 11 and 12, you'll realize that Tom wasn't able to join us due to extremely heavy workload.
Yes.
I was doing? I was playing lots of these games that just came out. It's been a very, very busy time, as I'm sure a lot of you know and can tell by your thinning wallets.
Right, exactly. How much money could we possibly spend on games?
Yeah, all right. Tell us, Tom. What's
to just sort of narrow things down. There's a couple of genres that have received huge shots in the arm recently. The first one, of course, being strategy games. Civilization IV just last week came out.
Woo-hoo!
The week before that, Age of Empires 3. So if you're into strategy, for real-time fans, there was Age of Empires 3. For turn-based, old-school fans like me and Brad, Civilization IV just came out.
Young bucks.
Yeah. Big AAA titles. They're both... in ways, very good. Now, Brad, you're into real-time strategy. Do you keep up with them much? Have you played any real-time strategy games lately?
I have barely got to play Age of Empires 3. I've only played the demo so far, because we've been in just total crunch mode.
Right.
So, here. But I plan to get to Age of Empires 3 and play that. My only beef from what I'm reading about it is that it's still essentially the same game from, you know, 3, 4, 5 years ago. And I think as someone on Quarter 3 put it, it's not that we want them to make it like Rise of Nations. It's just there are some innovations that have occurred in RTSs that I'd like to see in Age of Empires,
right,
especially since it's so well-crafted. Age of Empires 3 is just an incredibly well-crafted game. I would say Ensemble has that almost that Blizzard touch where they get it. You know, they know how to put those nice things in there that just make a game truly polished.
And that's one of the reasons. My whole issue with Age 3, I very much have a love-hate relationship with it, because it does have, I mean, it definitely shows the mark of a seasoned, experienced developer who's been doing this for over a decade and really knows what they want out of their design. And it's not so much, the criticism isn't so much that it's very much like the older games as that it uses that same school of design. Namely, it's a real-time strategy game, which is all primarily driven by how well you can manage an economy,
specifically managing the economy is managed through your management of individual peons, which makes it
exactly.
It takes away a lot of the strategy and into your hand-eye coordination. And I think a lot of us who have been playing these, on a serious note, because I'm feeling it. And I'm sure if Jeff Greener is listening to this, and he's not, is that when we played Age of Empires 1, we were 1995, 90, I don't know what year it came out, but we're now almost 10 years older, and we're not as good at zipping around with the mouse and clicking on these individual units when, you know, a player comes in, especially multiplayer, and starts wiping out our peons. And that it's frustrating that even all these years later, the most effective tactic to wipe out your enemy is to target their peons.
And that's exactly... I mean, that's in a way a strength and a weakness of Age 3, is that it does appeal to this sort of old school line of thought and the sort of the reflexes. I think the problem isn't so much that you have to click fast as that Ensemble hasn't built an interface up around the game that really facilitates that. There's just a lot of awkward stuff in there that they should have known better than to ship. So it's not so much reflexes to me as they didn't give you the tools to really let you work with it. There's a lot.
Right, but without the hotkeys and the interface, it does come down to reflexes.
Exactly.
That's what I'm saying.
Right.
If you don't have, if they had all the hotkeys and all the other UI stuff, then you could jump in there and, you know, then it wouldn't be about reflexes as much as just knowing, of course, knowing your keyboard layout. But that can be learned.
And I do think that this is something, at least I'm holding out hope, that this is something that they realize and that they can patch into the game, that they can address these problems. There was, when they released a demo, there was a lot of criticism about the size of the interface and how much of the screen it took out, and they took that criticism to heart, and between the release of the demo and game going gold, they included an option to shrink down the interface. So they were very responsive to criticism in that span of time. So I can't help but think that after the release of the game, they might be more responsive to criticism about the interface and address some of those issues.
Oh, absolutely. I think if they put in some hotkeys, for example, on a lot of stuff, and it would make the gameplay. And I mean, like I said, I haven't even played the final version. I've only played the demo, and I've seen the final version and read a lot about it. But I mean, it looks like it's going to be an awesome. It looks like it's a great game. It's just could be a lot even better with just some UI tweaks.
Right. And they've got, above and beyond the UI problems, there's just so much compelling stuff in there. The way you build up a home city and can tweak your strategy with these little cards that you can play. The look of it is amazing. It's just a beautiful, lush, evocatively lit and colored game. It's gorgeous.
Actually, technologically, Age of Empires 3's engine, I believe, and I could be mistaken, but from what the guys have been here who have, we're friends with quite a few people in Ensemble. They are actually using, I'm so frightened. We talked about with ATI and see if there's an easy way to do what they're doing. MIP mapping. Essentially, they're able to have units that look like they're originally created with lots and lots of polygons, but render them on screen with very few, but still look like they have lots of polygons. And as a result, I have on my screen, which you can't see, of course, a unit from the game that they sent over here where it looks like a freaking cartoon on TV, except it's only got like 100 or 200 polygons in it. It's just amazing what they've been able to do.
Yeah, it is great technology. And hats off to a company that's traditionally been just so oriented towards gameplay for doing something that looks so good.
They apparently had one guy doing water for a year over there. One guy did nothing but work on the water.
Well,
now
it
that's
shows
a job.
The naval maps look great. Yeah.
Yeah.
That's one of the big strategy releases. The other big one, of course, Civ 4, which Brad hasn't played yet. And whereas I have a love-hate relationship with H3, I have a love-love relationship with Civ 4. That's an interesting... the Civilization series has been sort of like... This might be pushing it, so bear with me. But it's been sort of like the Alien movies. In that the first Alien came out, and... each successive movie was passed along to a different director and had a very different flavor. They retained some of the same things, but under different directors created very different kinds of movies. And it's sort of similar with the Civilization series. Sid Meier did the first one. Brian Reynolds' input was obviously apparent in the second one. A Firaxis veteran named Jeffrey Briggs was the lead designer on the third one. A fellow named Soren Johnson is the lead designer on Civ 4. And the changes he has made to the series, at first I hated. And my first week of playing Civ 4 was like a grumpy old man saying, you know, you guys took the stuff I loved and you changed it, and I want to go back to the old one. But after a week, I couldn't go back to Civ 3 if my life depended on it. I mean, I love everything Soren has done to the series. I'm ready to crown the man, the new successor to Sid Meier.
Well, so what are some of the highlights from where he really stands out?
They've really done a tremendous job of taking out the sort of gamey exploits that you really needed to do well in the previous Civs, such as, you know, going into a city every turn and shuffling around the citizens to make sure you optimized your output, and also the annoying riots that would pop up in your cities every now and then and shut things down. All that's been streamlined out. There's no corruption that makes it hard to found new cities where you create a city and it just sort of sits there and doesn't do anything for turns on end because corruption is sapping away the production capability of it. All of that is gone.
What do they put in its place?
Well, the way corruption... The cap on the number of cities you build is basically your maintenance is the facet of how many cities you have. So the more cities you have, the more it hits your gold income. It's kind of transparent. Like, you don't necessarily see this. You can you know when you've built too many cities, but it's not something like you're looking at a city that should be producing four shields and it's only producing one. You don't feel like you're losing anything. And it's sort of difficult to describe because it's also streamlined and much more intuitive. Building settlers, for instance, you used to have to spend population points to build a settler. So you would get a level 3 city and you would think, okay, I'm going to build a settler. And then suddenly it's knocked back down to a level 1 city. That's gone. You don't spend population points to build workers. So things like that, very different. Also very different is the way you develop the map. He's created this great sense of a living world where rather than just plopping down irrigation on some squares and mines on other squares, the world sort of comes alive with pastures full of cows and vineyards and windmills and water wheels by rivers. There's just much more personality to the map. The tech tree is completely different. Combat is completely different. It's basically... And Soren Johnson wrote an amazing afterword in the manual, which is like a director's commentary. I encourage anyone who's curious about the changes, when you buy the game, read his afterword before you start playing, because it really does a great job of explaining why they made different changes. It's a great insight into the way that Soren Johnson thinks as a developer.
You know, the thing is, for Axis, I mean, I have to say, they're like our heroes here at Stardock, because they could sit there, if they had wanted to, they could have milked Civ 3, or 4. They could have just put on a 3D engine, made a couple minor changes, gone out, and it would have still been, you know, hailed, and it would have been probably a huge financial hit for them. But they don't. They keep reinventing themselves. They keep going back, innovating, and creating these truly new classics for a new generation that brings in a whole new set of people into the you know, community of strategy gamers. And I just... My hat's off to Soren. I mean, he's, you know, if he were here, I'd hug him or something.
You'd kiss him. I know you would.
Now I got going that far. Watch it, Kristen. Be careful.
It is a marked contrast to what Ensemble has done with Age 3, where they're really reaching back to the old school fans before Age of Mythology. They're really reaching back to them, whereas Firaxis, they're sort of scrapping everything they've done before and... reinventing the wheel, as it were. What Civ 4 is risking is guys like me not getting past that first grumbly week of being pissed that it's not like Civ 3 or Civ 2 or Civ 1.
And in Ensemble's defense, though, they got a lot of grief over... Because Age of Mythology was a pretty cool design in many respects. And they had a lot of people that gave them a hard time about, it's not just like Age of Empires. And I think that may have made them a little bit, you know, nervous when they went back to Age of Empires 3.
Right. And just to stress, Age 3 is not at all... Age 3 has plenty of innovations over Age 2. It's not the same game. There's a lot of great new stuff in it. But yeah, I think you're right. I think they definitely might have been nervous about using the name Age of Empires on a game that was too dramatically different from... Age of Empires 2 and 1.
I'm just, you know, I hate you, you know, because you're getting, you get to play this stuff, and I just, it's not fair. I right now, if I could, I'd go home, and I'd be playing Civ for like a week. I'm only a few shades away from the guy who lives with his mom in the basement playing video games all day, because that's the dream. You know, that's the long, well, not with my mom, but, you know, just sits in the basement, plays video games all day. Is that so much to ask?
And Brad just wants to take early retirement so he can go home and play these games. I want to say...
Okay.
No, Derek. Me first.
Okay, man. Back off.
One of the guys in the office here pre-ordered it, and he got the fancy box with all the goodies and stuff inside. That alone makes me... And I'm not a big strategy games fan. That box alone made me want to go out and buy the game and start playing it.
You just said exactly what I was just going to say. I mean, seriously, I saw it for the first time today, and I went, ooh. And
it raised the bar, I tell you. As someone making a 4X strategy game, I mean, even though it's not out for, you know, several more months, it makes me pretty nervous. They have raised the bar. I tell you, people are going to expect a lot of stuff. And even though, you know, like, you know, they have multiplayer in there, I know hopefully, if there's any reviewers listening to this, that it won't be lost on them. But we elected to forego the multiplayer and have a $39.95 price tag instead of the $49.95 price tag that Civ 4 has. But still, even taking that into account, Civ 4 shows you how it should be done. I mean, how big is your manual, Tom?
Oh, it's hundreds of pages. I mean, they have a great, amazing, they have a great manual. Not only a great manual, but their documentation is amazing with the Civilopedia online. Anything you want to know about, it's right there in the game at your fingertips, or you can easily flip through the manual.
And I feel sorry for the poor guy writing our manual. He's going to be really going
to
be
a tough act to follow.
Yeah, exactly, because he's going to be under a lot of pressure.
Yeah,
let me tell you.
The manual for Civ 4 in the pre-order special edition that the guy in the office here had was like 227 pages or something.
Wow.
Yeah, it was massive.
It makes me nervous because we had only budgeted 60 pages for our manual, and we may have to increase that.
Are people really going to read all 260
pages? Yes, they will. You're talking to one person who... I'm one of those guys on the old Civ manuals. I'd take it... I shouldn't say I'd take it to bed and read it at night. It's like a paperback
book. That is a little
book.
Weird. Yeah,
yeah. I have to admit, I love that stuff.
There are some of us. I love manuals as well. I love reading game manuals. There's still some of us left. And to Civ 4's credit, you know, they gave Soren a good 15 pages to write his afterword. They were very generous with the manual, so tip of the hat to them. Also, big time for first-person shooters. Four very big high-profile releases, fifth on the way. The new Star Wars Battlefront game will be out next week. But we've already seen Call of Duty 2, Serious Sam 2, Quake 4, and a new franchise from Monolith called Fear. So four very big titles just came out. To just sort of briefly recap them, my favorite of that bunch is Call of Duty 2, which is kind of against all odds because it's very much a retread of the first Call of Duty. A lot of scripted cinematic missions, a lot of noise and people running around and being shot and yelling, and it's just overbearing. And it's, you know, it's set in Normandy, it's set in Russia, we've seen all of this before. But they just did a great job of breathing new life and giving it new energy, and they did their own new engine for it. So easily, I think, the strongest of the bunch.
Great.
The unique one of the bunch is Fear, which is sort of this horror-themed shooter where the horror sort of takes a backseat to these really amazing, technologically impressive gun battles. I don't think there's any first-person shooter whose technology right now is as ambitious as Fear's. It's a great way to stress test your system. Quake 4 is the big Me Too one. A company called Raven, sort of a. I'm sure it'll have its place. I think a lot of old school fans of Quake multiplayer will appreciate what they did with Quake 4's multiplayer. But as a single player game, it's a little sleepy and kind of just stuff we've seen before. Not that impressive. Serious Sam 2.
I heard someone actually say about Quake 4 that it's basically just Doom again. Period.
Yeah.
You know?
It's a lot of shooting monsters. That series' strong point has never been its single player. And that certainly remains the case with Quake 4. And then the sort of sad one of the bunch is Serious Sam 2, which when the first Serious Sam came out from a Croatian team of developers, it was kind of an eye-opener for how many enemies you had on the screen at once and the crazy weapons that it had. And the second one just doesn't really live up to the promise of the first because its time has sort of come and gone. That sort of crazy, frantic action shooter has just been done better since Crow Team, the Croatian developers, sort of introduced us to it, and Serious Sam 2 doesn't really hold up next to the competition. So those are the four big first-person shooters. I heartily recommend Call of Duty 2, even if you're sick of the Medals of Honor and Call of Duties and Men's of Valor and Brands of Brothers in Arms, and I absolutely recommend Call of Duty 2.
Well, Tom, what's your opinion about the fact that all these games are coming out at the same month? I mean, people can only buy literally so many of these
and
games.
And you can only play so many at a time, obviously.
It's the nature of retail is that everything gets clustered towards the holidays. And I feel so sorry for the companies that just get lost in the avalanche of titles that come out. And not to mention, like you said, the gamers who don't have either the money or the time to play all of them.
Mm-hmm.
There's a reason why we come out in February/March.
Yep. Yeah, and I think that's why. Now, do you think it hurts your sales at all?
Well, it's a matter of we would be one of those games lost if we came out right now. So it's a matter we come out in February, March. People are still kind of playing games, but we're not going to likely be crushed by these mega releases. Imagine, for example, if Galaxization shipped this week. What would have happened?
Yeah, it would be buried.
And part of what we're actually seeing this holiday, I think, is everyone is wanting to sort of back off from the impact crater of the Xbox 360 arriving. So a lot of the stuff is being clustered, I think, further back from that, what is it called, Black Friday shopping day after Thanksgiving.
Yes.
So a lot of releases are, I think, even further collapsed into a shorter span of time because I think no one wants to come out around the time of the Xbox 360.
Yeah, that makes sense.
Yeah, this fourth quarter, unless you are a serious player, Civ 4, Age of Empires, definitely serious players, Quake 4. But I wonder, like, I'm not as up on first-person shooters, but with all these different first-person shooters, I'm wondering some of them may not do as well. Even though they may be fantastic games, it may be tough for them.
Right.
It may be real tough.
Yeah, I would not want to be on the retail shelves with a product right now. And that, for instance, Serious Sam 2, it's not a horrible game by any stretch of the imagination, but it just doesn't bear up well next to the competition, and I can't help but wonder, would it have done better for the publishers if they'd waited until early next year or tried to get it out earlier this year?
Yeah.
That's the sort of thing that you sort of feel bad for because it's probably going to be buried.
Well, I know I see people on Quarter 3 occasionally post that, well, why don't people release games in the summer? And I'll tell you why. Young game developers at the time, we should release our games like in June. And turns out, well, one, you'll get a lot less coverage in the game magazines because there's so much less advertising that they don't have nearly as many editorial pages to cover anything. I mean, it's really bad at that time of year. And two, the number of unit sales. I mean, a game that's sold in the summer can expect to sell far, far less in the summer, even though there's less competition.
People are outside more and, just not at their computers more, I would imagine.
Well, I think more, Kristen, it's that the sales rely so much on casual buyers,
mm-hmm.
an aunt buying a game for her nephew or a husband getting a gift from his wife or something like that. And so much of that happens during the holidays. That's when so many casual buyers spend their money on something like something as frivolous as a computer game.
Yeah.
And also, it is easy to come out in the summer and get to the top of the charts. But like Brad mentioned, you're not selling as many units to get to the top of
sure.
the charts.
Right. Uh-huh. So your profit is still not where it should be.
Right.
Where you'd like
and
it to be.
I would love to see releases spread out over the year, but like I said, it's the nature of the retail beast, and I don't see it changing anytime soon.
All right, Tom.
It's good to have you back, Tom.
Yeah, really.
Thanks
I didn't
for having
have
me
to
back.
Do anything.
I missed you guys, and I look forward to being back next week, and we'll talk more about what games have come out.
Hey,
now
all right.
Things are bearing out.
Yeah, we're in the hot time, which, like I said, you're in super busy time.
Yeah.
And as you as well.
Yeah. Busy all
around.
Yeah,
I don't even know where I am anymore. What day is this?
Well, we ordered
Brad. We ordered food for the team because the team's going to be here. I mean, they were here until after midnight last night. We're going to be back here in the early morning and same thing tonight to make that beta 4. And we're not even going to have it done. We're still going to miss our date by like a week because we upped the requirements for beta 4 because one of the things we didn't really have to deal with, this is our first time publishing, is the ESR... those bastards at Rockstar. The ESRP.
ESRB,
thank
right?
you.
Yes.
The requirements on it have gone way up since last time.
Mm-hmm.
So we have to get them stuff a lot sooner than we did before. And now we don't have our manual set up. I hadn't even started the campaign yet for the game. And that all has to be approved by them. And it's just crazy.
Yeah.
It was not nearly this painful last time. Last time around, they kind of glanced at the game and gave us a rating like, I think it was a couple of days. Now it's just, we had to send them video of the game being played now.
Now, why? I don't understand why they're so... I understand
it's across the board.
Rockstar, but why don't they just... I mean, you're going to get a T, right? There's no
we're going to try to get an E. Gauss of One got an E.
Oh, you are? Okay.
Yeah.
wow, you can blow up an entire planet and still get an E.
Yes.
Oh, no.
Star Wars.
Yeah, but Star Wars, you know, in Star Wars, they blew up Alderaan, right? Now it's a PG.
Yeah, but that was pre-Columbine. You can't do that anymore. Because what if some disgruntled high school kid gets a hold of a Death Star? No, you can't.
That is true. You never know. I mean,
it could happen.
Another, you know, it just becomes a statistic. Another Death Star death.
That's right. That's right.
Death Stars don't kill people, Brad. People kill people.
I thought it was the
excellent
ultrasonic
point,
plasma doom ray that did it.
All right. I think we better let Brad get back to his source code.
And I've got to get back to Civ 4.
Yes, you do.
Oh,
yes.
Shut up, you. Shut up, you. I'm going. You know, I know where you live.
Well, welcome back, Tom. Thanks so much for joining us again.
Thank you.
And Derek and Brad, thank you for tearing yourselves away from whatever it is you do around here.
I was playing Civ 4, too. Just don't tell Brad.
You better not be. If I see anyone playing Civ 4, I tell you, until after the beta goes out, then we'll all be playing it, right? Well, that's you know, the only gotcha, though, is because Civ 4 came out before us, if there are some features we have that are pretty similar, people are going to be like, oh, yes, they copied it off Civ 4. And, like, we didn't copy off Civ 4. We copied off Civ 3.
Come on, people, get it right.
You heard it here first.
The views expressed on none of it.
Exactly. Thanks, Brad. And thanks for listening, everyone. This podcast was brought to you by NeoWin.net, WinCustomize.com, and Quarter2Three.com. Support us by subscribing to us on iTunes, PodNova, or Odeo.com, and look for us every week at www.poweruser.tv.